This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I'm Charlie Burris. That is Zach Reagan. We are live here on YouTube. I've been thinking about how to switch this up because I've been trying to do the old intro, but then now we're live on YouTube. So I'm going to give a little spiel here at the beginning. If you are watching on YouTube, if you are watching on Facebook, throw us a like. Whatever it is on Facebook, I don't use Facebook that much, and then share the show if you want to, and get this audience a little bit bigger because we want as many people involved as we can. You know, it's just fun. We all get to sit here and talk about Tennessee. Wherever you listen throughout the world, we thank you so much for listening to us. Zach and I are talking everything balls every week here on the Big Orange Podcast, and if that sounds like something you want to listen to regularly, as I said. YouTube, share, like, review, subscribe, whatever you got to do over there. And then the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple and Spotify. Subscribe there if you only want to listen. YouTube if you want to see our faces. And then if you subscribe on those platforms, you won't miss our shows when we're live at 4 p.m. on Mondays. At Charlie_Burris, at Zach DNT, at A to Z Sports. Facebook.com/A to Z Sports Nashville. And A to Z Sports.com for all the stuff that Zach and I write. On the internet. The bye week has come and it has gone. It was nice, Zach, to step away. The wife and I went up to Townsend right outside of Knoxville, made a day of it, and then came back and watched a little football to end the day. And it was great to just be able to, you know, like breathe and not have extreme anxiety on Saturdays. That's like, you know, that's just a plus. Sure, I don't have to work. I don't have to do my show with Crompton, and that's nice. But although I like doing that show, Crompton's a great dude, and we have a good time always. But you know, hey, that was good. Just to be able to, we don't have to sit there pulling our hair out watching Tennessee football. But the stress is back, baby. It's LSU week. Tennessee travels to Death Valley this week to play the LSU Tigers. Tennessee is favored. In that game, and we're going to talk about it all. This is a huge one, but we'll break it down. Zach, what's up, man?
Yeah, it was a fun Saturday of watching football that kind of got a little crazy Saturday evening. I mean, Georgia nearly lost. That LSU-Auburn game kind of started out looking like it was going to be a blowout. LSU comes back. It was a good Saturday of football, and it was nice to relax, not have to worry about a Tennessee game, no anxiety, no working on that type of stuff. It was fun to sit back and watch it. You don't get too many of those Saturdays when you do this kind of line of work. So it was quite enjoyable.
It really did feel like there was going to be the handouts to Tennessee Saturday. I mean, realistically, Georgia almost lost to Missouri, as you said. What in the world? LSU slips by Auburn after going down by 17 points. One that doesn't look so hot, Pittsburgh lost to Georgia Tech, who just fired their coach. And maybe that's a spot where it's the you fired your coach, they feel inspired kind of a game. Or Pittsburgh's not that good. I mean, who really knows? But regardless, yeah, it was a pretty crazy Saturday that ended up not being that crazy because nobody actually came through for Tennessee. Ultimately, Georgia came back. Missouri blew it. What is Eli Drinkwitz even doing? Punting there at the end, thinking he would get the ball back. I mean, I don't know. This isn't a Missouri podcast, but what are you even doing over there? I have plenty of thoughts about how stupid all that was. But, I didn't see this. Did Dish, Michael Allen says, glad y'all got to enjoy it because my Dish contract with Disney screwed me up. Yeah, apparently, like, ESPN just Saturday morning, they were like, oh, wait, ESPN's gone now. Like, well, just, you know, screw
it's
us then.
So frustrating when that happens. It the 2020 season, the COVID year, and I have DirecTV is what I use and have used for a long time. And it's more just out of habit and laziness at this point, to be honest. But in 2020, I remember they had kind of went through the same deal. I think it was CBS that they lost. And I was scrambling at the last minute trying to figure out a way to watch the Florida game that year. And I finally got it streaming on my phone and had to cast it to my television. It was delayed. It was a nightmare. The game was a nightmare. So it kind of fit the theme of the afternoon. But that is very frustrating when that happens. And it usually happens right about the time the game's getting ready to start, and you got to try to figure out a way to watch whatever game you're trying to watch.
Well, I think they did get it figured out, so at least there's that. But always good to just get toyed around with. You know, it's not like we have a choice. Well, I guess you do have a choice. You could just get rid of it, get something else. But thankfully I got YouTube TV. They did have the games on there. But regardless, LSU coming up this week. Probably a similar sort of feeling, I think, around Knoxville this week to the way that Tennessee fans felt about Florida. Just maybe not as doom-minded because the history is not there with LSU, although there have been plenty of wild games with LSU. The last time Tennessee played in Death Valley was the old 13 men on the field of freaking Dooley. And somebody was tweeting about that today. Was it you, Zach?
Not today, but not I have today. Recent. Oh, Josh Pate actually. He tweeted out the video as well today.
12 years ago, that was. Yeah. I was in college watching at a friend's apartment. Tennessee got the stop with 13 men on the field, and a whole set of people that we were watching the game with. We all got up and we were like, "Yeah! Oh my gosh, we won!" A whole set of people like ran out of the apartment and they're like circling in the street, like freaking out. And then slowly people were like, wait. And everybody came in and we had our dreams crushed.
I had a similar experience. I was watching, I had a bunch of people over at the house, and this was pre having kids. And it was mostly non-Tennessee fans that I was watching or had this with. So I was kind of up in the house watching the end of the game by myself, or maybe there was one or two other people, saw the stop, immediately went right back outside to where people were like gathered around the fire and stuff. I had no idea that Tennessee lost the game until like an hour later. Saw it on the bottom, like old school, saw it on the bottom of like the ESPN ticker at the bottom. And I was like immediately like going to the internet to try to figure out what happened. It was one of the more interesting and devastating losses in a decade that has had lots of devastating losses. That one is right at the top of the list. And the irony of it is the way that they lost to UNC in the bowl game later that same season, which really wasn't Derek Dooley's fault, but, you know.
Yeah, still. The old Tennessee gets screwed so badly that the rules of college football get changed.
Yes.
Classic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to Dooley, but that is in the past. Good Lord. Thank goodness.
The last time they played LSU was almost as crazy with the weather going crazy in Knoxville.
Oh, yeah.
When Brady Hoke decided to just go ahead with the second half and not kind of delay it there. That was about as wild of a scene as I've ever seen.
It's going to sound really douchey. I was in media at the time, sitting in the press box for that game, and I literally sat and like ate a cookie as I watched the entirety of Neyland Stadium just get drowned in rainwater. And I was just nice and dry, just sitting in the press box. Sorry to anybody who was there, though. I didn't, you know, that's what I was doing at the time. I'm sorry. I would have been out there with you had it been now.
Yeah, that's one of the few advantages there of covering the team is you're not in the elements. But if you've ever been in the press box at Neyland, you were so far removed from the action because the press box is, it's like it's in the clouds. It almost feels like it's so high up. And that is the one thing about covering a game in Tennessee that's not that enjoyable. It's just how far away you are from the action. Like you really do need binoculars to fully understand what's happening on the field and to differentiate the players from each other at times.
It's always my primary complaint. Like, because you go to a game in like Titans Stadium in Nashville, you're a lot lower.
Yeah.
You know, a little more field level, and there the windows open. But
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Neyland press boxes, like I said, it's like a graveyard in there. It's totally silent.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Unless Auburn's in town and their beat writers almost cheer for the team. Oh, yeah, Kentucky as well. Those two for sure. I've been in press boxes with both of those, and there's a lot of cheering going on with those individuals.
Well, anywho, we're gonna talk about it all. We'll go off of this. Ben Hall says we're clearly better than you, Jaden Daniels. Way better than LSU. I mean, clearly better than LSU. Jaden Daniels isn't even a poor man's Anthony Richardson. We'll get into that. I want to talk about it all. Before we get down that rabbit hole, I got to tell you about Superbook Sports, our amazing sponsor. Can you beat Vegas this football season? Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head to head with the best odds makers in Las Vegas. No fancy computer algorithms. No guys across the pond setting lines for American sports. Just the best team of odds makers in the business behind the counter at Superbook in Las Vegas. Plus, Superbook features some of the best odds boosts and promo bets anywhere. Download the Superbook Sports app right now or visit the Superbook or visit superbook.com and start your battle against Vegas right now. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Superbook Sports and superbook.com. Tennessee opens as a 3.5-point road favorite over LSU. Who would have thought before the season started that would be the case? But here we are, and you can go over to Superbook and bet on that game. I think some of the games that people maybe thought were going to be more interesting this week, like say Texas A&M and Alabama, might not be as close as we were maybe hoping, since Texas A&M, Jimbo just refuses to run offense from this century, and you know, good for them, I guess. But regardless, superbook.com, go download it, help them out because they're helping us out. And let's get right to it. Tennessee, LSU. What we're gonna do for the show today is give our quick take on it, and then three keys for Tennessee to win this game, just like we did a couple weeks ago for Florida. It went great. Then we'll give our prediction for the game. But just lay some groundwork here. This is a discussion that I wanted to have before we get into the nitty-gritty of, like, this matchup with this player with LSU, is to just think about this if you're a Tennessee fan. Because I was doing a show earlier today for my friend Mark Rogers, great, another YouTuber on here. Go watch his show if you don't. But I hadn't thought about it. But this is the truth of this situation with LSU. If you beat LSU this week, and then your only loss for the rest of the season is Alabama, or the rest of the season up to the Georgia game, and I believe the Georgia game is the second to last game of the season. It's really late this year, if I'm thinking correctly. Am I wrong about
it's
that?
It's in November. I'm not sure the exact week, but it's into November.
Yeah, it's really late. If Tennessee only loses to Alabama for the Georgia game will be for the SEC East. You, in year two with Josh Heupel, have the potential to actually contend for an SEC East championship with Georgia being this juggernaut that it's become with this talent. Of course, they almost lost to Missouri. You know, do it that way, you will. But, I mean, how? I thought about that today, and it had not crossed my mind up until I was doing that interview earlier today. And I was like, what? How is that even possible? That's real. You can lose to Alabama and still contend for the East this year. It's absolutely insane. There's going to be a lot of riding on every single game from here on out. But just think about that. If you pull off this big win, that's what's on the line, man. It's absolutely crazy.
No, it's a massive game from that aspect. Could put Tennessee in a position that we didn't think they would be in. Also, it could give Josh Heupel, something we were texting about yesterday, it could give Josh Heupel his third win over a ranked opponent on the road. And he would be the first coach to do that since Philip Fulmer did it between 1992 and 1994, three road wins against ranked opponents in your first 18 games Fulmer did it with a couple of wins against Georgia, and I think they beat somebody else. Can't remember who in 93 there. But I mean, almost 30 years since somebody's done that at Tennessee, and as many coaches as Tennessee's had over the last 10 years, it's kind of insane that is the situation here for Heupel. But it's one of these games where I don't really know what to expect. It's kind of like the Florida game where I thought I was going to learn a lot about Tennessee in that Florida game, and I really didn't. I learned that they know how to win an ugly game, and I kind of have the feeling that this game could turn into that again. Just the way LSU plays, they force a lot of turnovers, but they're not real good on offense. They don't really have an identity yet on offense. They're not throwing the ball really well. I mean, I think they had, 5 passing yards or something absurd in the second half against Auburn, which ironically was the lowest amount of passing yards that a team has had in one half in a win since LSU beat Tennessee in that 2017 monsoon game, which was
really
a bit more understandable given the situation. There wasn't a lot of throwing going on in the second half of that game. But so I do think it has a potential to turn into kind of an ugly game, but Tennessee won games like that against Pittsburgh and Florida this year, games where things didn't necessarily go to plan for Tennessee, but they still found a way to win. So I think the experience in those games is really going to serve Tennessee well, not only the rest of the season, because you got some games on the schedule outside the Alabama-Georgia game. You still got Kentucky game that could get ugly. Perhaps this Missouri game is going to be a little more difficult than we anticipated, though I think
maybe
the situation there with Georgia, the way some people put it is it's a terrible place to play. There is no atmosphere there. You go to Columbia where there's nothing, and you sit around all day in a hotel if you're Georgia, because the game wasn't until Saturday night. It's just an odd vibe. And Missouri's defense last year was terrible. They get a new defensive coordinator in Blake Baker, a guy that doesn't really have a great reputation. I mean, he was demoted at Miami when Manny Diaz was there, kind of spent a year as a position coach at LSU. Not a guy that you really associate with these great defenses, and they kind of had their way with Georgia's offensive line. So was that an aberration? Is that indicative of Georgia having some weaknesses up front that is kind of a surprise to people? You know, maybe we'll find out more as the season progresses, but that was certainly an interesting outcome. But that's, you know, that Missouri game now, I kind of look at it a little bit different. It is at home. I still think Tennessee wins that game. I'm not saying anything like that, but there's a lot of ugly games on the schedule that Tennessee might have to win this year.
Oh, yeah. Hey, nothing about this is going to be easy. Yeah, your favorite going to LSU. Yeah, the time works in your favor. The 11 a.m. start time works in your favor. But this is never going to be some kind of cakewalk, even when you're playing, you know, a Missouri, even if they stink out loud. Like, it's just not – that's SEC football. But when I look at this, you win this game 10-2 is the most likely outcome. I do think you'll probably beat Kentucky because it's at home. If it was in Lexington, it'd be tougher, but you beat them in Lexington last year. And that game's in Neyland Stadium, and that's easily the toughest game outside of Alabama and Georgia if you just sort of default call those losses, even though I think Tennessee really could be competitive at both this year. But, 10-2, it'll almost be disappointing if they don't hit 10-2 if you win this game. Like, that's
no, for sure, because you're going to be favored. You're going to be favored in every game but that Alabama and Georgia game. Unless things just go completely south for Tennessee, you're going to be favored against Kentucky at home. You're going to be favored against Missouri at home. You're certainly going to be favored against South Carolina and Vanderbilt on the road to end the season. So, yeah, if you win this game, I think 10-2 has to be the expectation. And that's, you know, that's based – I don't think that's putting – too high of expectations on Josh Heupel. I think those expectations are based on what we've seen him do. And it's like, yes, this team is capable of going 10-2 and possibly getting to the Sugar Bowl and winning 11 games. I mean, which is insane to think about considering where the program was, you know, less than 2 years ago. Never thought we'd be sitting here having this conversation, like a legitimate conversation about this. This isn't just us being Tennessee fans and throwing out these absurd expectations that just aren't realistic. I mean, I'm not it's not like we're sitting here saying that Tennessee's got a chance to make the playoff, even though they are in a position where a few things break their way, it is technically still possible. I don't expect it to happen. I don't think Tennessee has the depth to make it happen. I think that's where Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, some of these teams, they have the advantage where teams get beaten up late in the season, and they got the guys that can still go out there and compete. I mean, we already saw today that Tennessee lost Warren Burrow for the rest of the season, and say what you will about him, but I think Tennessee missed him against Florida, and they're fortunate that they're supposedly getting D. Williams finally ready to play this week, the junior college transfer that got high hopes for, but still that losing Burrow hurts your defense a lot. I mean, that's a significant depth piece in a position unit where you didn't have a lot of depth to begin with. So that's probably what's going to hurt Tennessee later on in the season against a team like Georgia. Going to keep that playoff thing probably from happening, but I still think 10-2 is you win this week. Yeah, I agree. That does kind of become the expectation.
I was talking to Austin Stanley and Crompton, Jonathan Crompton, and, you know, we were like, oh yeah, I'm already talking myself into like an 11-1 season, how Tennessee could pull it off. Yeah. Mm. Just typical Tennessee fan stuff. And I was thinking like the most amazing way that this could shake out, if you obviously outside of going undefeated, which I think is a little above what any of us need to be expecting of Josh Heupel this season.
Yeah.
The ideal outcome would be you beat Alabama. Then you lose to Georgia. It's in Athens. I mean, that's just a bear of a game. You lose to Georgia, and then Georgia loses the SEC championship game. So then you make the playoff. Georgia doesn't make the playoff, and Alabama makes the playoff after winning the SEC championship game. So you kick Georgia out of the playoff. Tennessee makes it in, and Alabama makes it in.
We've seen it before. I mean, what? Was it LSU?
So amazing.
Was it LSU or Alabama in that, was it the 2011 season when LSU and Alabama, didn't they play each other in the championship game that year? Like it was a rematch of the SEC championship game or something? Or no, it was a rematch of their regular season meeting, but one of them didn't reach the SEC championship game. And because of that is the reason that they were actually able to like back into the BCS championship game at that time.
Yeah, that's the only reason that Alabama has not missed the playoff was because of that. They ended up backdooring their way in that year.
And the thing with Tennessee is that if they're 11-1 and there's another, and they don't, you know, get to the SEC championship game and there's another 11-1 team, I know it's not supposed to work this way, but I think just the idea of having Tennessee and this insane fan base in the playoff is very appealing, and I think Tennessee would kind of trump whoever else was at 11-1 to get. I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, and that's a crazy scenario that would have to play out. But it is, I mean, it is a conversation worth having because Tennessee is a top 10 team, and anytime Alabama or Georgia plays a top 10 team, they're on upset alert, and everybody in the country's hoping that they get upset. So, I mean, this is Tennessee beats LSU, and this is the conversation that's going to be happening nationwide ahead of that Alabama game on October 15th.
Yeah, Tennessee being good is a gift to ESPN, to CBS, to anybody like that, because the fan base is just so rabid, and they're just a magnet for drama. And so, like you're saying, their other fan bases want to tune in and see Tennessee lose. Or they're like kind of cheering for the underdog story, whatever it may be. And then obviously Tennessee fans. I mean, you just look at that Florida game. The amount of mobilization within the Tennessee fan base, just how they will travel, how they will spend money, how crazy rabid they are on social media, wherever it may be, watching the game at home. It's absolutely insane. That is something that I'm sure that all of those networks and everybody is hoping will be the case, is to get Tennessee back in that upper echelon. Cause it's, man, they're on a different plane of existence from most of college football in terms of the fan base. So I wanted to start off with that to kind of lay the stakes of this game. Like you win this, and you were talking about having not just a special season, but competing for an SEC East championship. That's where you're at. At that point, you really turn your eyes to that Kentucky game, assuming that you lose to Alabama, although, again, potentially winnable. You turn your eyes to that Kentucky game, and that becomes the hurdle to competing for an SEC's title. But starting there, now, for the keys for Tennessee to win this game, we'll do what we did last time. We can kind of go back and forth, and this is how we can get into the conversation of the exact matchup that Tennessee has here. But just to run through some of the storylines here, Jaden Daniels got hurt against LSU, against Auburn. LSU's quarterback got hurt, may not be able to run as effectively potentially, although there's a lot of hope that he will be 100%. But he also can't throw the ball very effectively. So if he can't run, that is bad, bad news. Then the backup came in against Auburn, and he was really bad. Nussmeier, highly rated recruit, but just wasn't it in that Auburn game. And so there is that factor. Then for Tennessee, Cedric Tillman has high ankle sprain, but he got the tightrope surgery where they sort of tie your ankle back together. and so he should be coming back this week, maybe the next week, maybe the week after that, if it doesn't progress right, but could play this weekend. Then you have Warren Burrell out, as we've already mentioned, and Dee Williams, according to Josh Heupel today at the press conference, is coming back for this game. JUCO transfer to Tennessee. He was a very highly rated JUCO transfer that Tennessee picked up. He got good reviews during fall practice. And hopefully, and you beat Florida without Warren Burrell. He's not an absolutely required piece, but he really would have helped with depth and things like that. But Dee Williams coming back kind of in his stead there, and hopefully that helps. So what did I miss anything there? I'm trying to think of anything else. Hendon Hooker potentially kind of shoulder something going on there, but that really hasn't been talked about almost at all. I think he's fine.
Yeah, obviously,
he played the entire second half of the Florida game. Torched Florida with that shoulder. So, I'm not putting too much stake on that. I think that's it.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is Tillman, and sounds like Jaden Daniels is going to be pretty much a full go based on what Brian Kelly said earlier today. I mean, he got banged up like Hooker got banged up kind of, but it's still expected to go and be his normal self.
Him coming out of the game and staying out of the game in a really pivotal situation makes me think that they may be downplaying that.
He's fine.
But,
he kind of reiterated, though, that Jaden Daniels was his guy. And I don't know if that had to do with Nussmeier not looking great the other night, although I think Nussmeier's better than what we saw in that situation. I think LSU is just not really – I don't think Brian Kelly – who is a very much a CEO type head coach. He is not, it's not necessarily his offense. It's not his defense. I mean, this is Matt House's defense. This is Mike Denbrock's offense, their offensive coordinator, which is a whole nother story because Brian Kelly once demoted him at Notre Dame. And then he spent a year kind of in a demoted position. And then he went to Cincinnati where he had some success there. And a lot of that, I believe, had to do with Desmond Ridder being their quarterback, but it is kind of odd that that's his guy whenever he's kind of demoted him before at a major program. But I think that's probably the situation there with Nussmeier maybe, and maybe with Jaden Daniels to some extent. I mean, I feel like he's a better passer at Arizona State, and admittedly, it's not like I was watching a lot of Jaden Daniels at Arizona State, but the numbers sure certainly look better. And they've also got a five-star freshman, true freshman on the bench in Walter Howard, too. So, Tennessee and backup quarterbacks, you got to be on alert for that guy because could possibly stick the guy in there that nobody's heard of, and all of a sudden he's just these LSU. I mean, LSU's loaded with these five-star wide receivers. You got Kayshon Boutte, who hasn't really performed as we expected this season. I mean, this is a guy that 2 years ago against Ole Miss had over 300 receiving yards in a game. I mean, he can be an electric player, one of the best players in the nation. I'm not sure what's up with him, if there's something kind of between the ears, not kind of on the same page with the LSU staff there. I know him and Brian Kelly kind of had a little a rough beginning, I guess you'd say. I remember Brian Kelly received a question about him early on during his tenure. I think last year during spring practice or right when he got the job, and they asked him about Kayshon, and he said, you know, I know his name. That's about it right now. And it kind of insinuated that there wasn't a lot of communication going on between the two. So he's not the only one they got. They got Malik Nabers, who's looked good. Brian Thomas, who's a big all wide receiver, five-star guy. So they got playmakers out there. They got talent. They just haven't been able to put it together, it seems like. I mean, that against Auburn looked really rough, not able to move the ball in the air very well. They're having to rely on Jaden Daniels running the ball a lot, and Auburn was able to hold him to 3.7 yards per carry. So his best running game was really against Florida State in that early season game. So I LSU, they're hard to figure out. Like, they got all the pieces, they just haven't put it together yet. And that can be a scary thing, because it was kind of the same situation with Florida and Anthony Richardson, where he had this kind of coming out party against Tennessee. And I didn't think it was because Tennessee, I mean, they had some lapses on defense, but Richardson made some good throws. He made some back shoulder throws that were impressive. I mean, he looked like a legitimate NFL prospect, like a guy that with his size and his athleticism, if he cleans some things up, he can be a guy that makes it at the next level. I mean, he's still developing, and that's part of the process. And I kind of get the same feeling with this LSU team. Like, they got the pieces. When are they going to put it together? Are they going to put it together? You hope it's not this week if you're Tennessee.
Yeah. Just do it a little later in the season before you get that figured out. A really interesting matchup actually later in the season is going to be LSU-Florida. Pretty fascinating to see what happens there, just because I think they're in pretty similar spots. But
that's the same day as the Alabama game, and it's a night game. They just announced that the 15th. So, yeah, that'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah. But Brian Kelly's just such an odd coach. I could absolutely see his time at LSU going very similarly to how things are going with Jimbo.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna recruit well. He's going to get players in. But he thinks, because he's had success, that his system is infallible, and mm-hmm. just, you know, he's pretty air. I mean, just going out and saying that, like, one of the best wide receivers in the SEC, arguably the best wide receiver last season in the SEC, and you're just like, oh, well, I know his name. Come on. But the kid's on your team. And what are you doing over there? Just, like, not paying attention to who is on the roster. I
mean, that feels like part of the reason that Boudet is not performing like we expected, because there's just a huge disconnect between him and the coaching staff right now. And I mean, you can put that on the player all you want, but if you're the coach, you got to figure out a way to get the best out of your player. Like, you can't have a five-star guy like that everybody thinks is going to be the next Jamar Chase, and you're just like, yeah, you got to figure it out. Yeah. You know, I mean, that feels like that's what Brian Kelly's doing with him.
Yeah, it's so strange. And crazy nugs in the comments, he says. Brian Kelly allegedly killed a kid. Frame that however you would like. Wasn't it he sent a GA up on a...
Mm-hmm, on a windy day to film.
To film on a scaffolding tower. The tower fell over or something. Think about that what you will. I forgot that happened, actually, with Brian Kelly. But taking all that in totality, he's just I think we've well established he's not a great sort of cultural fit at LSU, although I don't know how much that matters. If you're a good coach, you're a good coach. Nick Saban's not a cultural match at Alabama, and he's the best college football coach.
I mean, there has been no better cultural match at a school in the history of college football ever than Ed Orgeron in LSU. I mean, there is not a better match. And we saw how that worked out. I mean, Orgeron got, he won him a national championship, but that's hard not to win a national championship. You got Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and 10 other NFL draft picks. I mean, I think we could have coached that team to a championship, but that fit did not matter when the games weren't being won, when discipline wasn't in the program, when it was just kind of chaos down there in Baton Rouge. I mean, they got him out the door pretty quick. The fact that they went to Brian Kelly was a surprise for sure. And I get the feeling with Kelly, like, you can't deny what he's done. I mean, he took Notre Dame and turned them back into a national contender. He couldn't get them over the hump, but he certainly did better than the previous coaches at Notre Dame have, Charlie Weiss and the coach before Weiss, was it the guy ended up at Washington, I can't remember his name. You know what I'm talking about. Willingham? Yeah. Something like that. Anyway, he's taken Notre Dame further than those guys did. So he's a good coach, but I get the feeling that he's not that authentic. Like, he changes his – and we've seen this in action. He changes his personality to kind of fit wherever he's at. So it's –
yeah.
Like, you don't really know who Brian Kelly is as a person. And not to bring up Butch Jones, but that was Butch Jones' mentor back in the day at Central Michigan. And you see a lot of the same – I think Kelly's a much better coach than Butch Jones. It's not even close. Not even the same neighborhood. I'm not saying that. But personality-wise, there's a lot of similarities there.
Like, to me, Brian Kelly is Butch if Butch had self-esteem. Like, Butch
– yes, that's
didn't
good, yeah.
believe in himself at all. Butch had insane imposter syndrome. And Brian Kelly, I don't think he does. I genuinely don't think Brian Kelly gives a crap what you think about him doing TikTok dances and stuff.
And he shouldn't. I mean, that's what you're doing. That's what you think is going to get your recruits and all that. Like,
yeah.
Lean into it, own exactly. it, believe it. That's fine. I mean, I get it.
Yeah. But it is not a coincidence that Butch acted that way and Brian Kelly was his longtime mentor. So, with all that said, we do have
do you think Brian Kelly's embarrassed by Butch Jones?
Oh, surely. Yeah, right. I mean, that's his main product that's come out of the Brian Kelly coaching tree. I mean, he's had a couple other guys, but
that's the one, yeah. Outside
yeah, he went to a major program and they sort of act the same. And yeah, I hope he is. I hope he's ashamed. He should be if he's not. But let's get to our three keys to this game. I think we've kind of laid the groundwork nicely. So those are all the storylines coming in. And now I'll throw it to you, Zach. Your first of the three keys for Tennessee to beat the LSU Tigers this week in Death Valley. Where are you going?
Yeah, I mean, I think our first one's probably going to be the same. It's the same as the Florida game. You have to contain Jaden Daniels. I mean, that's his biggest weapon is running. He's done most. He hasn't really done a lot of damage with his arm, and part of that is because he's been very cautious with the ball. And if you watched Brian Kelly's media session earlier today on Monday, he said something that I thought was interesting, especially since we're leading into this Tennessee game. He talked about wanting Jaden Daniels to take more chances, and he's okay with him not necessarily just being careless with the ball and turning the ball over a lot, but he's okay with an interception. He's like, if you're being and Brian Kelly, I thought made a good point here. If you're being careful with the ball, you're limiting yourself when it comes to big plays, kind of what we saw under Jeremy Pruitt and the way that he wanted his offense ran with Jared Garantano, very much just take care of the ball. If you're being aggressive, a lot of times, unless you're Hendon Hooker, apparently, you're going to turn the ball over here and there. It's going to happen. It's a byproduct of being aggressive and taking shots down the field. And he wants Jaden Daniels to be more aggressive throwing the ball. Is that because he's banged up and can't run as much? Possibly. You know, to go into what you were saying earlier, that they're downplaying that a little bit. Or is that just what Brian Kelly thinks is going to make this offense operate the way it should and not have to rely on Jaden Daniels running the ball as much? So I'll be interested to see if they try to open it up a little more, take more downfield shots, and how Tennessee will respond to that. But you still, Jaden Daniels with his legs, I mean, he can do a lot of damage. Ran for over 100 yards against Florida State, almost 100 yards against Mississippi State. Those are your two, you know, kind of your two big games that they played. Ran for almost 60 yards against Auburn. They held him a little more in check. But that, to me, is same old story. You can't let that guy run on like 3rd and 10 and get a first down.
Absolutely. And that is certainly one of mine. This feels so similar to Florida, except I think Daniels is not as effective. He's not as physically gifted as Richardson. No. I think if Daniels plays his best game, it will not come out the way that it did with Richardson, where he goes for 500 yards to there, blah, blah, blah.
No, I mean, the most he's thrown is 279 against New Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, 80 yards against Auburn, 210 against Mississippi State. That game is probably a little more in line with how the Tennessee game will go, because Mississippi State is different offense, but they're similar in the fact that they run a lot of plays. They typically score a lot of points. LSU got the best of them a couple of weeks ago, but that's still, I think, more of what you can kind of expect in this game. So he had more opportunities to throw the ball there, but he just really hasn't been that effective at all with the ball. I mean, most of his – when he played against Mississippi State and Auburn, completion percentage went way down compared to when he played against Southern and New Mexico and even Florida State in the season opener.
He that's obviously a huge piece of it for Tennessee in this defense. But what's going to be interesting to me, and this I'll just go ahead and say this. So this is one of my keys. I'll move on. This will be my second key. So it was absolutely contain Richardson. To contain Jaden. Thank you. We're still playing Florida in my mind. but you gotta contain Daniels. But it really goes hand in hand with you got to bring pressure. I want to see that. Because when you do, it is effective. And I think you have an opportunity here, if you are Tim Banks, defensive coordinator for Tennessee, to bring pressure like you did against Pittsburgh. I know everybody and their mother who didn't want Tennessee to win that game was like, well, if Caden Slovis would have played, blah, blah, blah. The reason Caden Slovis didn't play is because you were crushing his soul before he went out of that game. They were bringing heat on that kid on like every play, and it was so great to see. And Tennessee went completely away from it against Florida. I said it last week that game against Florida was the definition of selling out to stop the run, and to whatever extent they were pretty successful in doing that. I mean, they held Richardson to 65 yards on the ground and really a completely non-existent running game with the running backs. And I think so LSU with their rushing offense Daniels is their rushing offense. Mm-hmm. They really don't have a bell cow running back in this game. They have,
they have some guys, but yeah, they got dudes.
But on the whole, like, they don't have a dude that's like, oh yeah, he's gonna run all over you, that guy. You even saw, kind of leading up to that Florida game, we didn't really talk about it too much, but they had Etienne. And he had a really good reputation coming into that game. Tennessee held him down. But I just feel like, and I mean, I might be wrong about this, and Banks might continue with that stop the run strategy just to make sure Daniels is contained. Bring the heat. I want to see that, because this kid, you already got him. You already got a kid here who's not great throwing the ball. And if you can get him here in footsteps, it's over. I mean, it just feels like they'll have such a hard time moving the ball if you get in his head like that.
For sure. And one thing going in Tennessee's favor there is LSU starts two true freshmen at the tackle positions. Will Campbell at left tackle, Emory Jones at right tackle. And I was back and forth. There was so much going on Saturday night. I was watching, LSU. I'm watching Georgia. I'm keyed in on Clemson, NC State. I'm watching my Mets completely blow the division against the Braves. And there's tons of things going on. And the right tackle, Emory Jones, I noticed, gave up quite a few pressures and seemed like, I think I tweeted it out, I was like, okay, Byron Young and Tyler Barron should have a field day against this offensive line and these tackles, because they're just going to overwhelm them. I mean, they can bull rush these guys, and they're good players. I think they're talented players, but they're true freshmen. I mean, they don't have a lot of experience, haven't been in strength and conditioning program that long. I think that is a definite advantage for Tennessee, and that's a great second key, I think, to winning this game.
Absolutely. I do want to say this little preview at the end of the show. Crazy Nug says his prediction is 45-31 Vols, and he says, we all know Charlie's picking against us per usual. First of all, Crazy Nugs, I chose Tennessee to beat Pittsburgh, and I was right about that. Mm-hmm. I was wrong last week. I admitted that I was wrong. I did a whole apology tour with Crompton after the game.
I still feel like that was you falling. That was you falling on the sword, picking Florida. Like, somebody had to do it, right? Everybody's picking Tennessee. Everybody in the world's like, this should be an easy win for Tennessee. They're favored by 10. And you know what happens in those situations? Their upsets happen, and you prevented that.
I had to play the Kirk Herbstreit and just give somebody who doesn't
Yeah, you should have been right there with Theo Vaughn dumping Gatorade on Josh Heupel because you were part of that win.
That's what I'm saying. I was in there. I was in the action, baby, because I gave that karma out where I said, I will not be jinxing us this week. No, not me. But just hang out till the end. We'll give our prediction. You don't know where I'm going to go. You don't know. But that's my second key. Bring the heat. Bring the heat. Did you concur on that one, or are you going somewhere else?
No, I think it's a great key. That wasn't what I had written down. I do think it was a great point there, and it's something that Tennessee needs to take advantage of. But my second key was avoid turnovers, specifically fumbles, because LSU, for some reason, I don't know if it's just the way the games have gone. Again, I haven't watched a ton of LSU, so I don't know the exact specifications of each situation and play. But they forced more fumbles than that, I think, this year. But they've recovered 7 fumbles this year, which I think is one of the top numbers in the nation. Whatever reason, if it's the way they're flying to the ball, if that's the way they're being coached up, and we've seen Tennessee lose some fumbles. Princeton Fant lost that fumble early in the game against Florida that just killed Tennessee's momentum when they're down in the red zone. Jalen Wright has had some fumbles. Even Hendon Hooker had a fumble in that Florida game, which was more just, strip sack situation. But you can't give the ball away in Baton Rouge and expect to win the game. I mean, they're going to have to take care of the football and avoid turning the ball over via interception, obviously, as well. But that's not – I mean, Hendon Hooker has done great, with that. He hasn't thrown an interception this year. He's only thrown 2 since becoming a starter for Tennessee, only 3 in his whole career at Tennessee. He's thrown a lot of passes, so I don't worry about that as much. But the fumble thing, that's kind of concerning, just because Tennessee's lost some, and LSU seems to be good at forcing them.
Yeah, whatever it is, avoid mistakes. That was one of the keys that we had against Florida, was play clean, and it's going to be huge again in this one, especially on the road. And it just, with the nature of Heupel's system, where you are already giving the opposing team so many possessions, you cannot afford those turnovers. You just can't. And also, I think you got to force some turnovers, because that was so massive in that Florida game, that fumble. When Florida was coming down, you turn around, take a 17-point lead after the fumble. I mean, that can be the game. Win the turnover battle, play clean ball, and avoid it, because clearly whatever they're doing is working, getting teams to cough up the ball, and it doomed Auburn in that game. I mean, they were going to score anyway, but they were close when they gave up the ball on a couple of chances there. But that is a huge one. And then my third key to this game is something that I said in the postmortem of the Florida game. I said that Tennessee dictated the game. They did not dominate the game against Florida, but they dictated it. Never at any point in that matchup did it feel like Tennessee wasn't kind of in control. Like, Florida was on their back foot the whole game. Even when Florida had the lead, you sort of felt like, okay, they're up 14-10, but the offense is just absolutely cooking. You're doing whatever you want. You're getting the tempo that you want. You're getting the wide open receivers that you want. You're running the ball the way that you want. They were dictating the game, even if it wasn't a 20-point blowout. Now, it almost was. Frankly, it should have been a 17-point win for Tennessee had you not, kind of imploded there at the end. But they fully dictated that game. And that's where, like, Big Ten Jeff's been in the comments this whole time talking about how Tennessee's beaten overrated teams. Well, here's the thing. Tennessee essentially beat Florida by 17 points, and then they sort of screwed around there at the end and almost blew it. But you had a stranglehold on that game coming down to the wire, and do that again and just don't implode this time against LSU. Play the game that you're going to play. LSU's defense is better than Florida's. Let me take a look here. Their rushing defense is number 4 in the SEC, and their passing defense is number 5, I think. I looked at that earlier. Yeah, number 5 passing defense in the SEC. They're better than Florida. So
real quick on the running defense, though.
Yeah.
You got to think, they played Mississippi State, which
that's a good point.
They do not run the ball. And Auburn, which is one of the worst offenses that I think we've seen in quite some time. I don't know what Brian Hartson's doing down there, but they try to give a game away every week, and they do some really silly things like they did at the end of the LSU game where they try to run a trick play, and the guy just kind of throws it right to the LSU defender, pretty much steals the win for LSU. So it's not like – you got to take the schedule into account a little bit there. I think their defense is better for sure, but they're missing one of their best interior defensive linemen in Mason Smith, former five-star guy that's out for the season. That's a huge loss for them. They lost him in the Florida State game, I believe. So while they're better than LSU, at least we think they are, I don't think it's something where it's like, okay, this is some dominating, suffocating defense that Tennessee's going to go up against.
No, but there is the potential that they will play a little better than Florida did. I mean, you did whatever you wanted against Florida. I mean, it was a hot knife through butter in that game. And I don't think it will be as easy in this one. And Hendon's going to have another huge game. And I think he's really going to have to utilize his legs. I think he also really needs to emphasize protecting his body. Don't take hits.
We got to get him sliding a little better.
It stresses me out every time. He has these great runs, and then he takes a huge hit, and you're just like, oh, no, please get down. And he got injured, twice last year at different points.
And our group text that we're in with Austin Stanley, he pointed out how Jalin Hyatt rarely gets hit hard. He always gets out of bounds or gets away from the hit. And it's such a smart way to play. Like, it's protecting yourself. It's protecting the ball. So maybe he needs to take some pointers from Jalin Hyatt.
Exactly. Just protect the body. So mine is dictate the game. And that's all going to be on the offense. The defense, LSU is going to get theirs. It just, with this defense, your secondary is just flat out bad right now. Maybe the defensive line really steps up. I like Danny Pritchard here says pressure, and more pressure. I absolutely agree. That was my second key to the game. Maybe they do bring pressure and they're crushing Daniels and they can't move the ball at all. Maybe that essentially happened against Pittsburgh. So maybe you have a replay of that. But this time, unlike the Pittsburgh game, if they give you that opportunity where they're not doing anything on offense, crush them. Win this game by 20. Like, go ahead and do that and just bury them and play your game, because clearly you have one of the best quarterbacks in America. You have, in my opinion, at a minimum, the most innovative offensive coach in college football, if not the best offensive coach in football on the sidelines. And just, just win this game. Walk away. Stop making us stress out so much, please. That's all. That's what I'm really saying by that is stop stressing me out so badly, please. Please and thank you.
I think my final key is something that I mentioned a little bit earlier, and it's just don't sleep on these wide receivers. I know they haven't done a ton this year because of the way their offense is kind of operated, and they've forgotten Boutte's existed, but he's not the only guy on this team that's talented. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, Jerry Jenkins, Jack Besh, who's kind of a hybrid tight end, wide receiver. Cole Taylor is a good athlete as well. You don't want these guys to have like a coming out game, because I feel like they're too talented to just disappear for the entire season. Like, eventually they're going to hit their stride a little bit. I don't think LSU is going to turn into some 8-9, 10 or 10 win team that threatens Alabama in the SEC West or is going to knock off Alabama or anything like that. But I think they're going to improve as the season goes along. I think we've seen some improvement a little bit since the Florida State game. It's been incremental, but it's there. So don't look at the stat sheet and say, okay, these guys aren't going to be that big of a problem. Let's just only focus on stopping Jaden Daniels running. Like, I think you still have to be aware of the threat of the passing game and what these guys can do, because they're all super talented. They're highly rated 4- and 5-star receivers. I mean, those guys didn't just get to LSU and forget how to play football. I mean, we've seen a lot of talent come through LSU before. And I think it's just the situation where they're building this program that it was really a disaster at the end of the Ogeron era. It wasn't as bad as like what Josh Heupel took over, because there was certainly way more talent on the roster that Brian Kelly got. But the culture was a mess, the discipline, all that stuff was a disaster. And Kelly's kind of having to go in and just start from scratch. So they're going to get better as the season goes along. You can't let their coming out party be this week in Baton Rouge.
Absolutely. And I do think The underproduction of the wide receivers to a certain extent is Kelly's scheme. I think he is not good on offense. He really, I mean, you think back to his time at Notre Dame, he was just such a huge tight ends guy with his offenses. They had some really great tight ends during his time at Notre Dame. And he really doesn't, you look at the stats this season, the number five receiver on the team right now in terms of production is a tight end who is a true freshman, Mason Taylor, only 106 yards on the season. And so that gives me a little solace in maybe Tennessee won't be at the receiving end of a total breakout game for LSU's wide receivers. And maybe it is just Brian Kelly sort of screws these guys over in terms of production. But I could not agree more. Just don't let this be like with Anthony Richardson last week, where just all of a sudden a kid who can't throw the ball. Oh, wait, he's great at throwing the ball this week. And I maybe Banks won't go completely all out trying to stop the run like he did in that game. And that might change things. We'll see. But maybe D Williams coming back can be. Please be a factor. Please, dear God, I hope so badly that he makes a difference in this game, because Lord knows those defensive backs need it.
Quite a spot to make your first career start, though, on the road, 4-0 team, you know, ranked matchup. It's a huge, huge game. I know it's a 12 or an 11 a.m. game, but it's still going to be a good environment there, especially them coming off the win against Auburn. I think they're kind of starting to get not necessarily momentum, but I think the fan base down there is, you know, getting into it a little bit. I mean, they're frustrated with the offense, no doubt. I can understand that, but there's still, it's still a hard place to play no matter what time of day. It's obviously easier at 11 than it is at 7 or 8 at night, but either way, it's Death Valley and it's a road game against a ranked team.
Yeah. It's not gonna be easy. Even if you did get the benefit of that 11 a.m. start. And so our three keys to recap here, mine was contain Daniels. We shared that one. Then I had pressure, bring the pressure on Daniels, sack this kid, get him here in footsteps because he already can't really throw the ball. And if he's going to try to run, obviously contain him. Those two sort of go hand in hand for me. And then I had dictate the game, play your game on offense and don't let them stop you. Don't go through a giant lull in the third quarter where you can't move the ball, dictate it all the way through, play your game. And Tennessee has a great chance to win this game comfortably, honestly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, recap in mind, contain Daniels, avoid the fumbles, and don't sleep on these wide receivers. Go back to your second point there about dictating the game. And we talked about this a little bit before we jumped on here and went live. Brian Kelly today was asked about stopping Tennessee's up-tempo offense. And his answer was interesting, to say the least, where I'm not sure that he's really watched a lot of Tennessee, because he says, you know, they're lining up fast. They don't really get to get to what they want, the look they necessarily want either. You know, they're not going to give you a bunch of different formations and motions. And while it's true that Tennessee's not out there like, you know, Matt Canada was at LSU and NC State and Pittsburgh, running these crazy motions and all this pre-snap stuff going on. Tennessee's not necessarily doing that, but they run some motion. I mean, we've seen Jalen Hyde in motion. We've seen some different formations and some different looks that Tennessee gives. But that's not the point. I don't think Kelly understands the crux of Tennessee's offense. And it's a simple concept with complex execution, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, you split out wide. We talked about it a lot. You split out wide, you get the look from the defense. They don't have time to adjust, really. They just kind of got to line up and match up to what they think you're going to do. And then your quarterback, Hendon Hooker, reads it. And it's very simple. You know, are they loading the box to stop the run? If so, they're probably in man outside. We're going to go down the field and take a shot. Or are they dropping into coverage like we saw teams do early in the season against Tennessee, like Ball State did? Okay, we're going to run the ball. We're going to try to throw something short, maybe a screen pass or something. So there's execution there that's tough. I mean, you have to read it correctly. You have to execute the play. But the crux of the offense is so simple when it comes to that. And Kelly doesn't seem to grasp that, that it's not about Tennessee getting in some exotic formation and this crazy complex play that's going to, you know, just pick apart LSU's defense. It's getting the defense in conflict with what they want to do. And it goes to what you say. You get to dictate how the game goes at that point. It's like Kelly seems to think that there's really no point, that they're just running fast to run fast, that there's no objective behind it.
Here's what he said. This is from an article you wrote on AZSportsNFL.com. Said, quote, so if they're going to snap the ball 20 seconds on the clock, there's not a lot of motion. There's not a lot of changing formations. They've got to line up left to right, too. So to play fast allows you, obviously, a pretty clean look at what you're getting. But on the other side, you're right. You can't do a lot defensively. I mean, he just – it does genuinely sound like – I don't think the guy's watched a lot of Tennessee film yet.
No.
He might be in for a little surprise here in the next couple days.
Like, all he hit on was like, yeah, they go fast. And it's like, okay, yeah, they do go fast, but that's – there's a reason why they go fast. And it's not just to try to tire you out. I mean, that's a byproduct of going fast, that the defense gets tired because they're not able to substitute. But the offense is getting tired too. I mean, that's not the whole point of going fast. The whole point of going fast is to get the look that you want, the look that Heupel wants, the look that Hendon Hooker wants. And we've seen them do that against teams with way better defenses than LSU. We've seen them do it against Alabama. We've seen Alabama defensive backs with their back to the receiver trying to figure out where they need to be when the ball is being snapped. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that Tennessee does to you. So it's not just about moving fast. It's about getting you out of what you want to do, and then you get to control the way the game is played.
If Heupel's system had like a logo, it would just be him going like this. Because you got to think, if you're him on the sidelines, you get the formation that you want from the defense and you go like, oh boy, we're about to bomb it on these boys right here. Like, we got exactly what we want. This is about to be a 40-yard play. And Josh Heupel could just go, yes, the Lane Kiffin when he was coaching Alabama, you know, with the ball in midair. He knows it's a touchdown. Like, that's Heupel's whole system. You get them on their back foot, you catch them off guard, you hit them over the top, you hit them on the ground.
It's not even that they're always off guard either. I mean, that is part of it. And I mentioned that with the Alabama game, but it's not necessarily just being off guard. I mean, even when Tennessee takes their time, and we've seen them do this, we saw them do it against Florida some. They didn't always, you know, run a play every 12 seconds. They took their time, huddled, then they get to the line of scrimmage. You know, they took a little more time. It's making the defense kind of declare what they're going to try to defend. Because the splits are so wide, and this is part of what gave Georgia trouble too with Missouri splits. They were so wide that Georgia was spread out so much on defense that that's kind of why Tennessee had success last year against Georgia until later in the game. But the defense has to pick what they're going to defend. And that is, I mean, I can't imagine a scarier thought as a defensive coordinator, because you don't know what they're going to do. You don't know what the offense is going to do. I mean, you got to hope they make a mistake and that they turn the ball over. That's the best way to beat Tennessee. And Hendon Hooker just doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, that's been my take on Hooker all along. I mean, is he the most physically gifted quarterback in America? Absolutely not. But he is so good at protecting the football, at seeing what needs to be seen. And what we're talking about here, he, you know, and his vision in terms of giving the ball to the right person at the right spot. I mean, really, the best thing that can happen to a defense against Tennessee is that Hooker overthrows his receivers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one gift Tennessee can give them. And otherwise, I mean, they're just in a tough spot.
Otherwise you're hoping for like a tip pass at the line of scrimmage and it just happens to fall into defender's hands. I mean, that's your best chance, or, you know, you get to him with pressure. That's the other option. And Tennessee's offensive line's played pretty well this year. I mean, the offensive line's kind of one of those things where it's almost like the referee, you don't want to be talked about after the game. Like, nobody really talks about when the offensive line plays decent or plays pretty well and doesn't give up a lot of sacks. I mean, they don't really point it out as much. But when you give up 4 or 5 sacks, I mean, that's the first thing people are going to bring up. And they've done pretty well in those situations.
Yeah, they have. Hopefully that continues. I think it will, outside of injuries. on that line. I like the way that Ben Hall put it here. He said, and then simple physics kick in. You have to cover so much ground to stay with the receivers. Yeah, I mean, it's just a tough, tough spot to play defense against Tennessee, and everybody at this point has kind of learned that. Anybody that's played Josh Heupel so far at Tennessee has learned that, and clearly Brian Kelly has not, because
and I don't really see a way that it's going to – you can't really figure out Tennessee's offense, because there's just no way to defend it consistently every single play unless you just guess right and disguise it a certain way. But you don't really have enough time to disguise your defensive looks. More often than not, you've got safeties that aren't sure who they're supposed to be covering or if they're playing zone or man. I mean, that's what happens in a lot of these situations where against Florida, you got Brew McCoy streaking down the sideline because they just forgot to cover him, or Jacob Warren in the same situation where it's like, okay, who's covering the tight end? Nobody's covering the tight end. He's streaking down the sideline wide open, and all you got to do is hit him in stride, and it's a big gain or maybe a touchdown. There's really no good way to defend against that.
Sideline wide open. Yeah, it was so wild.
He was hitting in stride, and it's a big gain or maybe a touchdown.
Oh, dang it. Really... I had the stream going again in my head where it was playing on another browser. That's frustrating because I'm trying to tweet it out. You got a producer for the show. Yeah, 100%. Like, it was shocking in that Florida game where just some of those plays, like those defensive backs, it's not the best of the DBs in America, but like just how open Tennessee receivers were sometimes during that game. You're just like, how do you even let that happen? It's not even a bust. Like, there's nobody within 10 yards of this guy. Like, what happened?
I think we'll see more teams start running this offense. Yeah. But like we talked about before, it's not something that you can just say, we're going to do this, and then it's done. There's so much that you have to coach. It's not something you can break out all the time and run it effectively. It's something that Josh Heupel from day one had to they had to start over from scratch, and they had to have that spring practice and that fall practice to really go through this stuff and to get guys to where they run exactly where they need to be. They give the ball to the referee, the right referee to spot it. They don't throw it across the field and risk the referee dropping it and having to go get it so he can spot it. It's intriguing to me because Tennessee runs it so well, and I don't think that's talked about enough, how well Josh Heupel and his staff have coached these guys to be exactly where they need to be. Like, they never look confused on offense. They're always in the right spot. Even like Brew McCoy, who hasn't even been there that long, he's like one of the first wide receivers lined up all the time. Like, he's always exactly where he needs to be. And that's what makes it work so well. And if you don't coach it the right way, it's not going to work.
And probably my favorite part of the whole thing is that even it's down to a science, to the point where on some plays, like, receivers just don't do anything. They just sit there.
And they don't have to, because they're split out so wide that DB, you know, if the play's going to the left or even the middle, they're split out so wide that the DB is covering them. By the time they realize that they're not running a route, well, the play's done. Like, the play's already happened. I mean, a hooker's hit a guy in stride on the left sideline, or they've ran the ball up the middle. Whatever the case, the whole point of them is to just pull those defenders away from the play. And you're right, it is a bit of a breather because they're running so much and they're just streaking down the field. That kind of keeps them conditioned and keeps them from having to substitute and then allowing the defense to substitute.
Like, it's that unpredictable that you literally might just have receivers that just stand there instead of actually going anywhere. But Crazy Nug says Oklahoma runs a version of it with guys who used to work with Heupel.
Yeah, Jeff Lebby is out there as the OC.
I even wondered that final – you sort of mentioned Missouri was kind of doing that super wide splits. A lot of teams do stuff like that. But that final drive where they ended up punting and just basically waving a white flag against Georgia, they ran these three straight just like bomb – plays, and I kind of wondered if that was inspired in some sense by Tennessee's offense, because otherwise I don't know what Drinkwitz was doing in that scenario, because I mean it it was just bizarre play calling, no matter what the inspiration was there. He didn't give his team a chance at all those last three plays, and then he punted the ball and basically gave up. But is this true, Zach? Tennessee just announced that they will be wearing the gray uniforms. Ben says this in the comments.
I hadn't seen that yet, but it wouldn't surprise me because LSU does like to wear white uniforms often at home. They kind of do the opposite of what some other programs do. So it does open up this huge option or a lot of options for Tennessee. And honestly, like when it comes to uniforms, I'm not too overly, you know, dramatic about it. I was glad they wore traditional orange and white for the Florida game. I think the smoky gray uniforms look good at times, but I just prefer the orange and white. It's not even about being a traditionalist. I just think it looks better. And I thought it looked really good in that Florida game compared to their blue uniforms. Like, I thought the contrast was really nice.
I really don't love the gray
uniforms. I mean, I prefer the black, I think.
I really liked them at the time. What did they debut them? 2013,
and was when the Adidas ones.
With the Adidas ones,
they were a little different, yeah. I don't know if you were there back then, but I remember when they unveiled the uniforms that year because they updated the uniforms with Adidas. I think that was the last year of Adidas, and they went to Nike in 2014. Yes. So in 2013, I think it was their media day, and it was Butch Jones. You know, he's first season there. So they have all of us go into the locker room, the Peyton Manning locker room there at Neyland, and they have were you there for this? Do you remember this? The uniforms?
I would have still been in college that year.
So they had a like catwalk in the locker room, like a runway in the locker room, and they had players coming out and they had like the lights off and, you know, lights going down and flashing everywhere, and they had players like modeling the new uniforms and Butch Jones up there like kind of showing them off and pointing out the little details, and it was the most bizarre thing, I think one of the more bizarre things I've been to at Tennessee, this like runway in the locker room deal.
I just put in the comments to Tennessee football Twitter did officially announce the gray uniforms. I do remember that. The ones with Adidas, I didn't really like at the time. In 2015, 2016, whenever they debuted these, the current Nike gray uniforms, I did like them back then. The passage of time has not done them well. I don't think with the gray, I don't mind it at all. I don't dislike them.
I like really it on the road better. This will be the first time they've worn them on the road, but I like the idea of wearing them on the road a little bit.
They didn't wear them in a bowl game. They wore them in the Music City Bowl against Nebraska.
Yes. Yeah. That was a beatdown of Nebraska too, mm-hmm. which was surprising the way Tennessee ended that season.
Yeah, that's true. But I just, the black ones I liked a lot more. Especially the T with the black outline. I thought that was slick as hell.
On the helmet.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever. I don't care what uniform you wear. Win the football game.
Yeah, ultimately just win.
Yeah, that's all that matters. Danny says, I love all the alternate uniforms, and I hope we use them more. I am totally fine with it.
Yeah,
I don't honestly mind either way.
What really matters is what the players think and what recruits think. I mean, ultimately, that is what matters. And if the recruits say, you know, this is what we want to do, then do it. I mean, don't replace the uniform. Just orange and white is what makes Tennessee, you know, unique. It's a unique color scheme that you don't see anywhere else in sports, especially this particular shade of orange. But, you know, if it's something that players like and recruits, they're the ones out there playing, you know, I think Josh Heupel operates in that manner where he kind of lets them decide and pick what they're going to wear each week. And we've seen more combinations than we used to see. We're seeing the orange pants come out more, which I love. I love the white with the orange on the road. Like, I think that's such a unique look, and they don't break it out a lot, but
like I would have loved the ideal to me in this game would have been all orange. That's my favorite. That's my favorite thing.
Oh, that's mine too. For
all
sure.
All orange. Ah, so killer. But if the recruits like it, if the players like it, wear whatever you want to wear. I do not care. Yeah, this is a great point. You look good, you feel good. You feel good, you play good. That's what Crazy Nuck says in the comments. 100%. Whatever is going to – you dress for the job you want, not the one that you have. So there's that. Now, with that in mind, we've talked – we've analyzed the game, sort of given our take on how we think Tennessee will do against LSU. Let's get to the actual prediction now. Zach, will I be a Debbie Downer? Once again, I guess we will see, but I'll throw it to you first. You were right about Tennessee beating Florida. I think you were. Were you pretty close on the score?
I think you. So I had 34-23, and it was what, 38-33?
Okay, so I hit the 38 actually, didn't I?
For the wrong team.
Oh, for the wrong. That's right. I.
You had Florida 38, Tennessee 35. So you were actually very close to the point total.
Yeah. But use, okay, so 34-23 was yours, and then it was 38-33 final. I'll say to everybody who's watching, if you want to drop it in the comments, we'll take a look at your predictions too, alongside mine and Zach's. So just go ahead and tell us who you think's winning this game. Tennessee, 3.5-point favorite, according to our friends at Superbook Sports. Go bet on the game there. So there's the line. How are you feeling about this one, Zach?
So I think I was a little more anxious and nervous about this game before watching LSU and Auburn play. I think there's obviously potential for Jaden Daniels to go crazy. He can run the ball. Can they defend it? How is it, you know, does he throw the ball more? I like Tennessee. I like the way it matches up, though, for Tennessee. I don't think this is going to be an offensive explosion game for Tennessee like we saw against Missouri last year. I don't think it's going to be like some 50-point, you know, showing by Tennessee, but I do think they win by double digits. I have Tennessee winning 34-24. I think it has the potential, like I said earlier, to get a little ugly at times, like some of the games have been this year, because I think that's how teams think they can beat Tennessee, that it's got to be an ugly game. And I think that's what this will probably be, because that's kind of what LSU's played this year.
I absolutely agree with the ugly game part, specifically because it's on the road. I think if it was in Neyland Stadium, Tennessee would have a better chance of playing a crisp game. So Tennessee is the better team here. I actually think that 3.5 points might even be generous. I thought that the 6.5 versus Florida was generous to Florida. I thought Tennessee was a 15-point favorite in that game. They should have been. Ultimately, I think I was right about that, outside of Tennessee imploding in the last part of that game. Even though I picked Florida to win.
I was about to say, yeah, you still picked Florida.
I didn't go. Hey, go back and check. I said Tennessee was a 15-point favorite on paper. I said that in the show.
Yeah.
I do think Tennessee wins this game because it is at 11 a.m. Tennessee and Josh Heupel, famously morning folks. Heupel loves the greeting his players at 7 a.m. and all that stuff. I think they'll be ready for the early game, coming off of a bye week. Josh Heupel, 5-1 in his career, 6-1 in his career. Didn't you look that up last week? I think 6-1 coming off a bye week for Heupel.
That's correct. His only loss was to Memphis at UCF, which came down to a missed field goal.
That was a good rivalry back then, though, because I think that would have been between him and Norvell.
Yep.
So I think all of those things working in Tennessee's favor, there's a very good reason that LSU fans were pissed about that start time and still are. And so I do think Tennessee's going to win. In terms of the final score, I agree that I think it's going to be ugly. But I do actually think that Tennessee, kind of similar to the Florida game, they pull away near the end. And then this time they don't fully implode. Now, LSU, we do have to point out, LSU has been good coming back late in games, down 17-0 against Auburn, came back, had to come back against Florida State and missed an extra point to lose. So they've been good late in games, but I think that Tennessee closes them out here. Because you don't have that supernatural Florida voodoo working over this one. And Tennessee, you know, you've won there. What? You lost the last time you played there, but the time before that in 2005, you won. So,
Which was a crazy game. It was a Monday night. They were displaced by the hurricane.
Katrina game.
Rick Tolson had to come lead them back, which was kind of funny since he had been at LSU before transferring.
Yeah. Um, But I'll say 34 to 20. I think they win by 14 points, but they don't score 50. Kind of how you said. So what was yours?
34-24.
34-24.
I will say, when me and you have had scores that are in the same range, that usually ends up being pretty close to what happens. So
yeah,
maybe this is good luck here for good sign here for Tennessee.
We'll speak it into existence there. Let's go through what some folks said here in the comments. Tennessee says 38-21. Jeff says 35-21. All of these are for Tennessee, for anyone that's just listening. Crazy Nug says 45-31 at Tennessee. Michael says 41-34 Tennessee. Everybody kind of has a little more faith in Tennessee than we do in terms of scoring the ball. I could see it. I could absolutely see it. Just Tennessee hasn't broken 40 against a better team this season.
Well, I think LSU's going to – They run the ball a decent amount. I mean, that's how they beat Auburn. It takes time off the clock. It's less possessions that Tennessee gets. I mean, that's kind of the reasoning for my lower point total for Tennessee. Yeah.
Same. Danny says 41-30 Vols, and then Educated Opinion says 41-28 Vols. So we're actually a little more bullish on the point margin, on Tennessee's winning margin over some of these, but we're not as bullish on Tennessee scoring, 45 points in this one. So that is that. We both think Tennessee will win. I'm not crazy Nugs. You're welcome. I didn't choose LSU in this. I mean, Tennessee's a better team. What am I going to say? And you don't have that supernatural history with LSU. I don't think that it carries that same mental block. And you got over that mental block against Florida. Like, that has me believing in this one. So I was right about my Pittsburgh pick. So I can choose Tennessee and get that right.
One thing about Tennessee that kind of off the field is just the focus of this team. Josh Heupel's done a really good job of not pretending like the outside noise doesn't exist. Like, he's not trying to tell his players to not, to completely ignore it, because he knows it's not possible. So why tell them to do something that's just not possible? So he's kind of approached it with this: embrace it, because it's a privilege to have this noise. It's a privilege to have people talking about you, but it means nothing if you go out and lay an egg in your next game and lose. So I think they've done a really good job of taking it's cliche, but it's the right approach. One week at a time, not looking ahead, taking your opponent very seriously, no matter who it is. So I think they're in the right mindset to not really have a letdown. I also think that the bye week, in addition to getting guys healthy, allowed Tennessee some time to emotionally come down from that Florida win.
Yeah.
That could have been you go into the very next week against a team like LSU on the road. I feel like that could have been a setup for disaster for Tennessee. So you've kind of got the Florida games 2 weeks ago, whenever this game kicks off, that's out of your system. You've had a week to kind of decompress from that and then start getting ready for LSU. So I think that really works into Tennessee's favor too.
Absolutely. There's a lot working for Tennessee in this one. I think it's going to be a little ugly if they do pull away. Like, I think they will. I think it'll be late. It's going to be close and stressful. That's the way that it is with Tennessee football. I think that's the Josh Heupel system now, just the way that it goes.
You win this game, you get to 5-0, and it's the scenario that we talked about before the season, where if you beat Florida and LSU, I mean, you're almost guaranteed a shot at 9-win regular season and 10 with the bowl. And really, you're really setting yourself up for 10-2, like you said. So this is really one of the more important games left on the schedule. That Kentucky game looms large, because that's going to be a tough game, though I think Will Levis is almost taking a step back at this point. I mean, he was kind of the reason that they lost to Ole Miss.
Yeah,
him he not was. Taking care of the ball. So, I mean, that's a game where Kentucky didn't have an answer for Tennessee's offense last year. If Tennessee can just defend him a little better, that's a game they should win by multiple scores too. But they're a well-coached team, so we'll get to that later on this month. But to me, this is the biggest game left on the schedule. As far as winnable games, I mean, Alabama and Georgia games, obviously huge, but you go into those games with no expectations.
Yeah, you'll be almost not carefree in that game, but you'll just be – there's no pressure.
It's not like the Florida game where you had to win the Florida game. Like, if you lose a game where you're favored by 10 points at home, against a new coach. That would have just it would have been tough for Tennessee fans to swallow and to reconcile. Like, okay, this is, you know, Josh Heupel starting to fall into some of the same stuff that the old other coaches before him, you know, fell into. So you avoided that pitfall. Now you got another one here, and it's going to be tough because it's on the road.
Yeah, Educated Opinion says Hooker must stay healthy. That's she said. I heard him tell Dobbs last week that he doesn't know how to slide. Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah, he was on one of those, NIL things that they're doing, Smoky Mountain, one of those things. I saw that as well. It's like, yeah, you somebody's got to go have a talk with Hooker. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he played baseball growing up. Most of these guys did. Like, surely he had sliding practice. I mean, or a little league, he had a practice devoted to nothing but sliding. It's the same thing. Just like you're going inside your base.
Get down. And beyond that, I was going to say, to your point before, now I don't know what it was. Regardless, that's it. I think that's our prediction for the Tennessee game. We both think that Tennessee will win. And anything else we might have missed, Zach, that you wanted to bring up this week? Any even non-Tennessee stuff? Because there was a lot during that bye week that happened. But
there was a lot during that bye week. Specifically, your Titans just about blowing it against the Colts. How do you feel about that? I know how you feel, but tell everybody else how you feel.
Yeah, I mean, this is the end of the show. If you're watching at this point, you're a real fan. I'm a huge Titans guy. I'm about had it with Vrabel and his 0 points in the second half. Then he gets asked and they almost blow it. They should have blown it. Jonathan Taylor fumbles the ball and gives him a gift, and that's why they won. No, the defensive line was really good. That's, you know, fine. They're going to be good as long as Jeffrey Simmons is on that line. But 0 points in the second half. Then he gets asked in the post game about, hey, you didn't score any points in that second half. Is that concerning at all? And he says, well, that's NFL football. That's NFL football. All right. Shut up, Mike. Get better as a coach, you idiot. It makes him, I'm done with his arrogance, dude. This whole, like, we're going to score no points in the second half. They have scored in 4 games so far this season. They have scored 3 points in second half.
Ooh.
3 points combined.
Do they play the
8 quarters?
Do they play Buffalo this year? Is that on the schedule for them?
They did. They Buffalo.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. That's one of the games. Buffalo's only given up 7 points in the second half all year. And that was in their loss to the Dolphins. So that's not a surprise. Yeah.
Ben says, me and Charlie got into it. We did on Twitter last night.
Oh, okay. That was pleasant.
Charlie's the least grateful winner that you'll see. I love that the Titans beat the Colts. It's always so nice. That game the Colts used to be Florida for the Titans. I mean, it used to just be a total head game when Andrew Luck was still there.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
the Colts stink now. They're terrible. And you should have won that game by 30 points. Like, you were up by 20 at the half. It's the thing about, like, the future. Yeah, you might win this game now, but Vrabel, with that attitude and his whole, like, well, I'm right, you can go screw yourself, that whole thing, you're not winning a Super Bowl that way. That's not happening. This is not going to happen. Unless you're like Belichick and you have Tom Brady. Because Belichick's that way, and that's why Vrabel's that way, is because he's a Belichick guy. But, you know, I don't think Tom Brady's walking through that door, Mike. So maybe humble yourself a little bit. Ugh. Anywho, I am glad that they won, though. I will say
it's very apparent. Very apparent.
they beat the Colts. I am actually glad about that. Oh, and Zach, we do. I apologize. The Mets, man.
Oh yeah.
What happened?
I mean, all they had to do was win one game, and it was just, I don't know. The Braves are the better team. I mean, they are, and I've known that. You know, I understand the Braves are the better team. They had a rough start to the season, and they gave the Mets a big head start, and they kind of had to make up ground all year. And the Mets are a good team, too. I mean, they're going to win almost 100 games. The Braves are better. They just kept chipping away, and they showed this weekend when it counted. They wanted it more, and they pitched better. They hit better with runners in scoring position, and they're going to, you know, they win tonight or the Mets lose tonight, they're going to clinch the division, which is all but certainly going to happen. So that's tough. It is what it is. Yeah. I'm a Mets fan, so it's not something that I'm not used to. I can handle this. I've been handling it for quite some time now.
I saw some real Nets or saw some real Mets nihilism there on the timeline over the weekend.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I did not handle it well in the moment, which I never do. If you were in my house at any point during a Mets game, whenever they go down like 4-0, it could be a July game that against the Reds and they're 4-0, and they're like won 7 games in a row, and I'm like you with the Titans. I mean, I'm like, this is it. Fire everybody, cut everybody, start over. This is dumb. I don't even know why I watch this.
Yeah, and see Danny in the comments here. He says, "Go Braves." Sorry, Zach. So many.
No, they're good. Hey, they're. I'll tell you this. You know, I'm a big baseball guy. This Braves team this year is better than the one that won the World Series last year.
They're good.
So it's gonna be. Good. I think they're better than the Dodgers too. I said that on Twitter, and they were like, "Well, the Dodgers won 110 games." I'm like, "Well, yes, the Braves just had a terrible April for some reason, but since then they've been the better team, so we'll see what happens in the postseason."
Well, there you go. We can both, even though the Titans did win, we can mourn over our team there.
Just go beat LSU this weekend. That's really what I care about.
Yes, because ultimately that is the thing that will make me the happiest. I am a bigger Tennessee fan than I am a fan of anything else other than my wife, maybe. So there is that. Thank you to everyone for watching and for commenting and weighing in. This was another amazing edition of the show. We very literally owe this show to everybody who watches. You're too good to us. At @Charlie_Burrows, at @ZachTNT, at @A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports.com, Facebook, all that stuff. Blah, blah, blah. You know where to find us. You're here. That's it. Go beat LSU. I want to be talking about 5-0 and a 10-2 season next week. That would be so amazing. Let's make it happen. All right. Charlie Burrows, Zach Reagan, we'll talk to y'all next week.
See you guys later.